Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Kühne+Nagel podcast series, Shipping Insights. I'm your host, Sarah Vollmer, Senior Vice President of Global Sea Logistics Customer Engagement at Kühne+Nagel. Together, we're about to embark on an exciting journey through the world of sea freight. With a front row seat to the industry's ups and downs over the past two decades, it's my pleasure to bring to you the latest developments, innovations, and solutions in this dynamic field. Whether you're a seasoned pro or simply curious about logistics, get ready for enlightening conversations and expert insights in our latest episode. Let's dive into the fascinating world of sea freight and welcome our newest guest. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Kühne+Nagel's Shipping Insights podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Vollmer, and today, a really exciting guest. Today, we have Jeremy Nixon with us, and we are so excited to have a chat with him and actually talk about something a little bit different than what we're usually talking about. We want to talk a little bit more of the human side of things and how it works out at sea. I know throughout my career, I've always had a lot of questions about how many people does it take to operate a vessel? What do they do? Aren't they in danger? Especially when we think about the various geopolitical issues that we have right now. So without further ado, I'd like to bring on our guest. Jeremy, why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself to our audience? Although you don't really need an introduction, but I'm going to ask you to do it anyways.
Oh, yes, of course I do, Sarah. Absolutely. So Jeremy Nixon, I'm the global CEO of Ocean Network Express, or ONE as we call it. We're a major container shipping company operating in about 140 countries in the world, moving about 12 million containers a year. And I'm really excited to talk about this side of the business, which really is hidden away from so many of our customers and so many people outside of the industry.
Yep, absolutely. And so for those of you that are maybe listening that are not in the industry, if you've been on the roads and you see a magenta or hot pink shipping container, that's ONE. So I love your color. I'm a pink fan. So
Thank you for the plug.
Of course. So I think let me start off by saying, you know, back in the 50s or 60s, right, there was a thing called SOLAS that was brought into effect. And why don't we maybe set the tone with SOLAS first so people kind of understand where we're going here with our conversation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, seafaring is a very ancient historical industry which goes back thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And particularly in the last 200 years with modern commerce, and particularly in the last 100 years with international trade just exploding, that the need to move your product or goods across the oceans became more and more critical to do that safely, to do that in a professional way, where there was a standardized process, a standardized way of handling it from insurance, from a financing standpoint, so that the customers would get paid and the shippers and consignees would get paid. And at the same time, the seafarers would be operating on ships that were safe to operate on. So we have a whole raft of legislation that supports that. But we're very lucky as a shipping industry, because we have United Nations in terms of the IMO, International Maritime Organization, which is the regulator overseeing this whole process. And, you know, we're very, very lucky to have that. Very few industries have that total global view on things. We're outside of all those national boundaries. We're the guys working right out in the oceans, international waters. So, you know, if you don't have some sort of standardization or some common understanding, then it's, you know, people could make all sorts of shortcuts and problems.
Sure, of course. So I think, you know, again, I've been asked, and I said it in my intro a lot, how many people you see the big vessels, and you know, we talk post-Panamax, and that those are the really big ones, guys, as you're listening, that you see out in the waters that have just what it seems like endless amounts of containers on them. How many people does it really take to manage one of these giant vessels?
Well, so if you look at a cruise ship, you know, the size of the cruise ship is linked to the number of passengers on board or people on board. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case for container ships. There's probably around about 6,500 container ships in the world operating today. Everything from 100 container size or TU, I think we're all aware of that term, 20-foot equivalent unit, about 100 TU, going all the way up to the largest vessels today, which are around 24,000. Essentially, you need a master or a captain of the ship, and you need a chief engineer to run the mechanical and operational side of the vessel. And then you have a sequence of different people on board doing different roles and responsibilities. But I would say the average container ship, whether it's 4,000 TU size, which is the old Panamax size that we were all very much used to historically in the industry, right up to 24,000, you're looking at between 20 to 26 to 28 people on board a vessel. So, you know, it is not dimensional by the size of the ship. Everybody has a specific role to do. And whether it's a big ship, medium-sized, small ship, actually the crew numbers don't vary too much.
Huh. Okay, so 20 to 26, 28 people on a vessel that has 24,000 TEU on it.
That's right, yeah.
Wow, including the captain and the first officer.
Yep, indeed. So you typically have the master of the vessel, who's overall responsible and in charge. You would have between 3 and 4 navigating officers on board who provide 24/7 coverage of when the vessel is at sea. And similarly on the engineering side, you'll have an engine room team. So you have a chief engineer who's overall responsible for the whole mechanical and operational aspects of the ship. And they're supported by 3 or 4 or sometimes 5 engineering officers, again, working 24/7. And then we have what is loosely termed as the crew, but actually who are highly important. And they are the crew who are looking after the maintenance of the vessel, looking after the maintenance of the engine rooms, are there for specific duties in and around safety and firefighting. Every vessel has to have a lookout on the bridge wing, particularly when we get into close quarters situations or weather deterioration, etc. So everybody's got a specific role. We've got engineers on board who are specifically electrical because we carry a lot of refrigerated containers these days, and all that needs to be monitored and managed. And then, of course, we've got crew on board whose job is to, you know, feed the crew themselves. So we have a galley, and we have, you know, our ship's cook, and we have various people who are supporting that side of the housekeeping side of the vessel as well. But probably, as I say, somewhere between 20 to 26 to 28 people maximum generally on these type of ships.
That's so impressive. But yes, you're right. You can't forget about the cook and the chef, right? Everyone has to eat, especially as you're out at sea you could be out for 4 weeks or whatnot.
Yeah. Indeed, Sarah. And that's what people don't realize that, right? And the ships are a long way offshore, and they need to be totally self-sufficient and work 24/7.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, with that. So people are away, could be a week, it could be 2 weeks, it could be 4 weeks, who knows, depending on the world of congestion or routing at any given time. What could happen when these men and women maybe, or is it primarily just men that are out at sea? What could happen to them during this time?
Yeah, so just to add a little bit of context to that, to the points you just raised there, typically on the container ships, the officers and crew are running somewhere around about a 4 month secondment at any one time. And then they would have 2 to 3 months vacation after that. They don't all change at the same time. That used to be the old model. I mean, I very humbly was a very junior seafarer myself at the age of 18, and we would all join the ship together, right? And then we'd all leave the ship together, and it was like, all your shipmates all in the same thing. But that changes completely these days. And we rotate the officers and the crew so we have consistency of operations and oversight on what's going on. So yeah, if you say very, very approximately around 4 months away, 2 months at home, that's a kind of typical typical operation. And then, yes, absolutely, we this is no longer a male-dominated industry. We have a lot of very, very capable and very, very good female crew. Traditionally, that has increased over time. Even back in my days, when back in the days of the Ark, you're probably thinking when I first went to sea, we did have some lady navigating cadets, female officers, but it was certainly the exception. Now it's increasingly happening more and more, and actually it provides a good, I think, a more healthy lifestyle and you know, better inclusion, more opportunities for people, and it also widens obviously the talent pool for seafaring.
Right, of course. Well, it's nice to see some women here into the mix from that point of view, and across the board, especially within our industry. So now, I know there was a few years ago, a movie that came out that was based on a real life story of something that happened off the coast of Africa. It was with one of your competitors. Is that still happening? Is that still a risk today? I mean, is there fear of pirates that could actually come into your vessel?
So I would say, you know, looking at risks, right? I mean, what are the risks on board a vessel? And these are very large assets moving across oceans and seas. The most obvious risks are weather related, although the vessels are very much designed these days. And if they're properly navigated, and we use a lot of weather routing systems and stuff like that to avoid bad weather, we're looking continuously at the wave heights, and we're using artificial intelligence and all this kind of stuff to try and minimize the risk to the vessel. But typhoons and all that kind of stuff happens, of course. And then the other big risk is potentially fire on board. That's a very, very serious concern, which I'll come back to. But I think, to your point, yeah, piracy is still an issue. Absolutely. And specifically right now, we still have piracy risks in the Indian Ocean and off West Africa, occasionally in Southeast Asia. But the biggest risk, of course, that we're all very much aware of at the moment is vessels actually being attacked or being fired upon by outside influences. And the biggest one, obviously, of that at the moment is the developments that have taken place in the Red Sea. And, from the middle of December last year, we saw a hostile act being taken by the Houthis, where they actually captured a vessel. And then from then onwards, we've seen virtually every other day attacks on any vessels going through that Red Sea routing. By missiles, by drones, by people attacking the vessels, and it's really very serious. So we as a company and many of our other fellow competitors have taken the policy decision not to put our crews at risk, not to put our customers' cargo at risk, and so we divert around the Cape of Good Hope. We do not go through the Red Sea. But piracy is something that we are very much aware of. We have much better intelligence these days. We work with various authorities, various defense establishments who give us good feedback. And where the risk is very high and we cannot deviate, then actually we will have armed guards on board and we will take various measures to minimize the risk of the vessel being attacked by pirates or boarded by pirates.
How do you make your people feel safe when there's really nowhere to go?
Indeed. So, the piracy issue has been... Has developed more and more in the last 15 years. There are specific people that specialize in piracy. It's at the moment, fortunately, it's not as severe as it was. But we go back to 8-10 years ago, it was very serious, and many of us had to have armed guards on our ships, particularly basically going west of Sri Lanka. And going up in just before getting in, up to towards Djibouti and the Red Sea, we were regularly being coming under risk of pirate attacks, and very sophisticated as well, tracking the ships with high speed boats using armed weapons, etc. Very, very serious situation. But the most so you've got that kind of side of things. We have got, as I say, vessels can have navigational problems, engine breakdowns, could run aground. But probably the one that I think, you know, the highest one that we are concerned about continuously, all of these are very, very serious, but the one that's the most concerned is the fires, and particularly the cargo fires. And one of the concerns we have in the container shipping industry is that we are loading, you know, all these containers onto the vessel, and they are said to contain. They are, you know, declared by the shipper or by the consignee in terms of what the commodities and contents are. They have to be packaged and properly stowed within the containers under the IMO codes. But occasionally that doesn't happen. People can sometimes misdeclare what's inside the container, don't provide proper packing equipment, etc. And then we start running into the risks of having fires on board.
Well, that just happened the other week, right? Not on your vessel, but on somebody else's vessel. It's very serious.
Well, the container shipping industry, the World Shipping Council, estimates that every 60 days we have a serious fire on a ship. It's an extremely scary situation. The vessel catches fire, the cargo catches fire within a container. We don't know exactly what's inside the container. We'll go to the manifest, we'll look it up. But, you know, has it been declared properly? Is all the information to hand? And then, you know, how flammable or how dangerous is it? And we have to very, very quickly set up a firefighting teams. This is very well, you know, we go through a series of drills. We work all that through. We're working with the shore-based teams to give advice and help. But, you know, when you're in difficult weather, difficult conditions, the wind's blowing, you're unsure. Sometimes these fires are very high up in the ship, very difficult to access. The crew have to be extremely professional to try and handle that fire and knock out the fire as quickly as possible to avoid it spreading. And I think, you know, as an industry, many people will be aware we've had some very, very significant casualties due to misdeclaration of cargo, hazardous cargo that's exploded, caught fire, and in some cases even taken the ship down, and you know, putting seafarers at tremendous risk when these fires happen in terms of their personal safety.
Is there anything that can be done, you know, with this in terms of, again, it's, you're very much at the mercy of other people advising correctly what's in their container? Is there anything that can be done, or do we just continue to hope and pray that everything was declared properly?
So the industry takes safety extremely seriously, as you would imagine. And, you know, we're doing a lot on the weather side. We're doing a lot in terms of the design of the ships, the stowage and lashing systems on board to minimize the risk of stability problems or the vessels breaking down or containers breaking loose or all that kind of stuff. But the biggest issue, as I say, is those 150 million containers a year that the industry is moving. I think, you know, probably 95% of all customers are very honorable, very upright, very, very professional in the way that they work. But it's the 5% that is the risk. And it could be less than that. So what we are trying to do as an industry, each of us is in our own rights with our companies, we're doing a lot more work around checking and screening the cargo before accepting the bookings. And we have these hazardous cargo regulations, which are very, very strict and IMO regulated. And there's an onus on customers to book their cargo correctly and declare it correctly. But we're now moving into more sophisticated digitalization and AI devices to look and try and project forward. You know, does this commodity make sense? Have we heard of that description before? Does the weight of the container that's been declared match that type of commodity type? Do we normally pick up that kind of commodity from this particular port pair? Is it moving on these particular zones? Have we heard of this particular shipper before, et cetera, et cetera? So we're getting more sophisticated at that. And the World Shipping Council, which represents all the shipping container lines, is now working on a program, a cargo safety program, which will probably be brought in over the next 12 months, which provide an additional level of screening to try and, you know, project more and predict more and cut out some of these risks. But it's an ongoing issue and something we have to be very, very diligent over.
Oh, my goodness. so many things, right, to be concerned with, and your crew and the crews around the world on all the different vessels. Wow, they have a lot to contend with.
They do. And, you know, they're working 24/7 many of the times. You know, so we have these typical shift systems on the vessels. You know, you tend to work 4 hours on, 8 hours off, going 24/7. But also during your 8 hours off, it's not all recreation. You'll have some additional administrative duties on the vessels. But, you know, you're away from home. You're often, you know, can be put into some very stressful situations. And so it's a tough life. And we have to really manage that very, very professionally as the ship management companies and the ship operators. These days, you know, we do provide internet.
The Wi-Fi, we try to provide better communication so people can keep in touch with their loved ones more efficiently. They can get online, they can talk like you and I are as well. So we have satellite systems to be able to do all of that. But the area that gets also very stressful is if there is problems around their ability to come ashore and take some shore leave. So when we go into the ports and terminals, we try to give the crew time off while the vessel's alongside to be able to go and stretch their legs, to be able to go do some personal shopping, whatever, you know, is their particular requirements. But during COVID, this was an extremely difficult problem because many, many countries in the world shut their borders to seafarers. So, you know, if you're in the airline industry, we were still flying the planes. We were still allowing the air crews, the pilots, to embark and disembark from the aircraft and go home in the evenings or whatever. But the seafarers were treated as a completely different situation, which was really unjust. They were not allowed to come ashore. They had to stay on the vessels. And therefore, you know, for many, many months, they could not get ashore and have some type of leisure time. And the situation got even worse because normally we do these crew changes, I say, every 3 to 4 months. And we fly the crews in, we fly the crews out from their home countries to the individual vessels. And often we were not allowed to even do the crew change. So during the COVID period, many of the crew were on board for not 4 months, but 6 months, 8 months, even up to 12 months. And this was extremely stressful and extremely difficult. And we've worked with the United Nations and we work with many countries to say, look, if this happens again, you know, we have to come up with a better way of protecting the crews and ensuring that they don't have to have such very, very difficult hardships in this way.
Unbelievable. I think we didn't really think about that, right? Because you're right. I think you saw a little bit of the airline industry. The planes were still flying. Captain and the crew, they were able to go about their daily lives. But the folks, the seafarers, weren't able to do so. And then you combine it with, you know, especially during COVID, the congestion, especially on the U.S. West Coast that was out there and ships sitting out there for weeks and weeks and weeks and just compiling the issue. And I can only imagine what these folks went through and how they didn't go absolutely stir crazy, so to say, on a vessel.
And I think, you know, like, COVID had an impact on all of us personally, right across the world. And
sure,
people took different views about it afterwards in terms of their lifestyle choices or their working choices, right? And there's no doubt, as an industry, we did lose some seafarers who said, you know, we could never go back to doing that again and whatever. So I think we're rebuilding our industry, rebuilding our trust. We've got new seafarers coming through, we're training, and we're trying to put in place better safe measures in the future to try to avoid this situation. But you know, a pandemic is a pandemic, and the pandemic, you know, ultimately the decision around health and immigration is made by individual governments in individual countries and in individual ports and by individual municipal ports and mayors, etc. So we still face that risk and that problem. But we have to do a better job next time globally managing these health issues, not just for seafarers and for shipping, but in our normal national governments and lifestyles, right?
All the way around, absolutely. So, Jeremy, and I thank you for your time. We've had such a great conversation. And as we're winding down right now, I love to ask my guests kind of an advice, forward-looking question. So based on our discussion today of talking a little bit more about the crew and how vessels are operated and the various risks that they go through, what would you like shippers around the world, what would you like them to know? Like, what's your piece of advice or the one thing that you want them to get out of this?
So I think, you know, quite naturally, we all, you know, 99% of us live on land, and we think that shipping and logistics, we associate it with, you know, with the courier industry, with the trucking operations, where everything is very specific and very visible, right? But right. Seafaring is a critical part of our global supply chain. So, you know, over 85% of all products and goods that we are consuming and using in our homes and lifestyles come by sea and come on the vessels. And please understand that, you know, that the ocean environment is hostile and it's unpredictable at times. So to run things absolutely clockwork is actually very difficult to do. We do a lot to focus on trying to achieve that. But also think about the seafarers who are actually on the vessels and are making this happen. So, you know, think about, you know, being a little bit more, you know, caring, a little bit more aware of the human element here. And also, please think about the safety of your products when you're moving them. Please don't put our seafarers at danger. Please don't put our ships at danger. Please don't put our other customers' cargo at danger. You know, make sure we're properly packing, make sure we're properly declaring. And if you do that, over to us to get your cargo on time, safely, with no accidents, and to make sure that our crews and officers are really treated very, very professionally, and they have a very good quality and respectful life and a very good career ahead for them.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the different perspective here that you've really brought to the table, talking about this industry where so often, you know, we became as an industry more mainstream during the times of COVID and, you know, with major media reporting on it. But that was just the point A to point B, right, kind of thing. And you didn't really hear about the human side of it and what it takes and the various risks. So as we're enjoying our coffee cup or the shirt we're wearing or whatever it might be, there was definitely an element of risk to getting that to you as the end consumer. So always remember that. And the hardworking men and women that are out there that are trying to get it to that final destination in a very safe and efficient manner.
If we don't have seafarers, we don't have a supply chain.
Love that. I might steal that from you. If we don't have seafarers, we will not have a supply chain. Love it. So thank you again, Jeremy. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. And I hope it wasn't too painful. And I hope you'd agree to do this again. But it's been absolutely lovely to hear from you and get your perspective. So thank you again.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Kuehne+Nagel. And let's make this industry better and safer. Thank you.
I love that. So everyone, thank you again for tuning in to another episode of Kuehne+Nagel's Shipping Insights. I'm your host, Sarah Vollmer, and be sure to check out our podcast series anywhere that you listen to your podcasts. You can find us there. So thank you again and talk to you soon.